Well, Andrew, thank you for joining me.
Okay, you're welcome.
I've got a lot of respect for you. I've followed your work with Richard D. Hall and your Check the Evidence website. I've recommended you to a lot of people. I've added you to the group at the moment, and this message is coming up right now. People know I'm probably talking to you. But what's your view on where we are really first with this situation? What is your gut instinct of what's happening with the world? And because I've written a few notes here and that I wanted to basically say to you from researchers and people I've spoken to, but to me it sounds like there is, and I've written this down, there's a centrally globally coordinated mass propaganda to terrify the population to submission. Would that sound about right to you?
I think that's a pretty good summary. Yeah, I mean, this is one of those things I've said to other people, that we see that because it's global, that shows you that it is a global cabal operating and, you know, coming out into the open.
Yeah.
And you can see, you know, various documents like Event 201 and the GPMB documents and the Rockefeller document from 2010. And then there's this SPARS pandemic thing from Johns Hopkins that people have pointed out. On and on it goes, doesn't it?
Yep.
But then you try and tell that to somebody who's just watching the BBC and ITV and all of the shame stream media, as I now call them, you know, they think that the fact that it's global means that it's real. So they use the same evidence and come to the opposite conclusion. They say, well, if it's a conspiracy, it couldn't be this big. It couldn't involve this many people. A bit like they say about, you know, the Apollo hoax. They say, well, that must be real because they would have had to fool 100,000 people at Mission Control and all that and NASA centers and stuff. So you get the same argument. So when somebody, but I'll tell you what I said when somebody sent me a text message when all this kicked off in March last year. They said something like, what do you think is going on or something? And I just said, well, it was just a text message. I said, I think it's a global takeover.
Yeah. Agreed. Yeah.
That's what it seems to be. I've said to other people as well that, you know, when you look at it from a science perspective and all of that, and that's my background is in software engineering. So that's sort of a, you know, scientific discipline of sorts, or really it's a discipline where you need a lot of logical thought and analysis and that sort of thing. But you look at this and a lot of things don't really make sense, even if you accept that it is, a global control conspiracy. There's still some things that don't make sense. Like, you know, we were having conversations before we started recording about your GP and stuff. The way that GPs are behaving doesn't make sense. Is every single GP part of the global cabal? Is every single nurse part of the global cabal? No, of course not.
No.
But what's difficult to get a head around is how these people have been brainwashed.
Yes.
Even when you take into account, you know, even when you take into account the 24/7, you know, stream of shame that comes out of the TV and media, even when you take that into account, to me, it's still difficult to get your head around why these people are so doing things that are basically inhuman, but then, you know, in the next breath they'll be just reacting normally, like, you know.
It seems to me from my my research that it's mind controlled on the masses, really.
But what I
can't figure out is there seems to be two states of consciousness here, that those that choose to think and those who don't think. And it's more like it seems to me like behavior modification. And I'm just trying to work out, why do you think that there's people that actually know or believe or can see, or I wouldn't even say believe, because as John Trudell says, believe, in the middle of the word believe, there's the word lie. So I'm not going to say that. I'm going to say think. People that think that there is a global elite, and then there's those that are not. Is it because they are so attached to the umbilical cord of the system that they can't actually believe it will be strangling them? Bit like the Matrix, I suppose, that they're so intertwined with it that they will do everything they can to defend it, which is the words of Morpheus.
That seems to be something very like that. And again, you know, that whole film of the Matrix is that exposing the whole way that humans have been manipulated. You know, it's you know, it's like that itself. The Matrix film is a kind of disclosure. It's kind of like them telling everyone the sort of level of control that is in operation, but they present it as entertainment. You know,
yes.
And then you've made me think of this idea of getting consent from people, and yep. Like the Matrix film, by people just seeing it as science fiction, they're consenting to being controlled in that manner, because they're being told, you know, that this is how it works, but they're just saying, no, it's not that. That's just a fantasy, you know, fantasy, science fiction or science fantasy, you know. So that gets you down to this idea of the occult gaining, you know, those in the shadows, the secret societies and all that, gaining power over us by getting us to consent subconsciously most of the time.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to this idea, you know, people have talked about this being genocide, and it's not a word I like to use. It seems like one of these words that's very sensationalized, you know, like all these words that say, what's the most recent one? Boom. You know, you get a lot of these headlines, boom, now, don't you, where people want this. Or bombshell, you know, that's another one.
Yeah.
And I tend not to use any of those words when I put a posting up, you know, even if it's something I don't like using those words. And but then this word genocide is to me is the one I don't like using. But that got me thinking that what they seem to have been doing is scaring the bejesus out of everybody. We know that's obvious. And then people are going for this vaccine in very large numbers. I think they're still maybe not as large as some of the media are claiming. But maybe it's slightly under 50% of people. I don't know. I don't know the actual figures. I haven't checked, haven't looked.
Yeah.
But if you can get people's consent to get themselves injected with something which could kill them.
Yeah.
If they've consented, you've cracked it, haven't you? If you
dead. And I think David Icke even said this, and maybe John Trudell, but he said that there seems to be a they have to not ask your permission, but you have to, how will I explain this? They basically have to tell you what they're doing in some form, in some code. Yeah. If you go along with that, it's almost like karmic law, that they know something where they have to. There was a story about, whether it's proven or not, but I don't know if you heard about the story or the myth about the black-eyed children.
I have heard that story. Yeah, I don't know much about it.
But I went and visited the Native Americans, and I stayed with the Sioux Nation, the Lakota tribe, and they've told me about stories like this. And they say that they can't barge their way in. They can't do anything. They have to ask your permission first. So they have to knock on your door and tell you a story and say, I need some help. And if you let them in, you're consenting. And whatever happens after that, you've agreed. You've contractually agreed to let them in. And in a way, these people, or this, whoever these people are, seem to be operating in a way where we're going to tell you what we're doing, and if you do nothing about it, it can't come back on us. Mm. It feels like there's some karmic law, or there's some sort of protocol that they're following there.
I agree, and I think that explains the way a lot of this is going on. I think to some degree it explains why there are people like us who are not consenting.
Yeah.
And why the cabal are worried about us, because we're interfering with their operation to get other people's tacit consent, you know, and subconscious consent. That's where we come in. We're trying to say to these people, you know, look at what's actually going on. Let's try and think about this. Because once you start looking at it logically, then you start becoming conscious, and you're being less, you know, influenced by your subconscious, which is what they're accessing, you know, all the time. Yeah. And once you get out of the fear paradigm and you get into the more analytical and more sort of problem-solving, you know, paradigm and state of mind, that's when people find their sovereignty more and more, and they lose their, you know, their food source, if you want to put it like that. So I think that's, you know, I've come to the same sorts of conclusions as, you know, like David Icke and yourself and other people. So I think it is to do with consent. It is to do with consciousness. And I'm also wondering about, the idea, for example, of mass awakenings. is there a mass awakening? Well, you know, I don't know, and I don't know, you know, I don't know how much of it is under people like you and I's influence. Can we really influence and trigger a mass awakening? I'm really not sure, or whether that somehow comes from within each person, you know.
Yeah.
And they do it when it's their time, you know. Okay, I think maybe we can be ready and help them if they do want to go down the rabbit hole. And I mean, to be good looking at the exploring that angle a little bit, I've had a couple of messages in over the last few years, not just particularly recently. I've had one or two recently as well, actually, where they've said, well, you know, I always believe the standard narrative of XYZ, but, you know, when I saw Richard D. Hall's program and, you know, and I then looked at your website, I started to see things a bit differently, you know. And so I know that some of what people like Richard D. Hall has done and what I've done has had an effect. You know, that's what people have told me, that they just believe, you know, the crap on the mainstream, and now they don't. You know, now they totally reject it. So I think there is stuff going on, but it's a numbers game. You know, it's a numbers game. The ones in the cabal have got all the cards. We've only nearly all the cards. We've only got one or two cards, and they've got you know, the rest of them basically.
Do you think, Andrew, as well? Because a lot of people ask me this. Some people are not religious, but they believe in a creator or some sort of force. Do you think that there is a positive force? You can call it what you want, God or whatnot, that counters this dark force?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, there is. And I think I've experienced that. And I think you see it in lots of ways. I think it seems to express itself in synchronicities quite often. And also supportive things that happen to you in your life. So I do think there is a guiding you know, force that can influence you and help you if you are doing things for the right reasons.
Right.
And you're interacting in a way which allows that positive force to operate. But, you know, beyond that, you can even, you may have looked at this yourself in the past, and I remember reading this not ever so long ago, the yin and yang symbol, if you think of the yin and yang symbol. And, you know, I could maybe try and get that up on screen, but everyone will know what the yin and yang symbol looks like. And it basically shows you that you've got a bit of darkness in the light and a bit of light in the darkness.
That's correct. Yeah, I remember that now. I remember the symbol. Yeah.
And it's a very simple thing. And you look at that symbol and think, oh, yeah, that's quite an interesting symbol. But you can easily miss that detail. And so I think that it is. And also the way that you've got these two, one thing is curling around the other. Some say that this is indicative of the way that the ether works, in that there's positive, negative energy sort of in a constant interplay of circling around one another. And that's actually what creates, that's part of the whole creative process. You know, it's like, you know, the food chain, certain things are killed so that others can live. You know, it's part of the natural order of things.
Yeah,
so you can't just get rid of all killing.
No,
because if you did, then a lot of the life creation process wouldn't work. So when you look at it in that sort of level, as I have done in some ways, then you know, we're caught in some type of light and dark struggle. But it's more, it is kind of physical in one sense, but it's also spiritual. So what, in the same way that some people, you know, eat the flesh of animals, and other people regard that as basically being very cruel to animals, if not evil.
Yeah.
What if there are entities which are feeding off our spiritual energy? You know.
I'm so glad, Andrew, you said that. I'm interrupting you because no one's actually ever said that, and no one ever asks David Icke this question. But he does say that. He says that. These entities thrive on negative energy. They live off it, and they're on a low vibration, low frequency. But to me, does that mean they're evil? Because you could look at a shark and say, well, look what it's done. It's just killed someone in the water, but that's its nature. It can't help what it is. So I'm thinking, I mean, I hate to say the word evil, but are they just, that is just the way they are?
Well, I kind of have sort of come to that conclusion a bit. If you, in other words, if you extend the natural order of things as we understand them, you know, the law of the jungle, all of that, into the spiritual realm.
Yeah.
Then you kind of left with that sort of analogy. You know, in the same way that we would say, you know, watch the gazelles and the lions on the plains of Africa or wherever, you know, we don't want the gazelles to be eaten by the lions, but that's what the lions do, you know.
That's what
they were born to do, that sort of thing. And to us, it's pretty horrific to see these creatures ripped limb from limb and, you know, alive, etc. But that's the way it is. And, you know, what if there are demonic entities trying to do that with us? And and I think what you and I are doing is we're bloody legging it away from these evil. We don't want to be anywhere near these evil creatures, you know, just like the gazelles don't want to be anywhere near the bloody evil lions. You know, they're just legging it, you know. But it seems that a few people get caught up by these evil beings, and they get literally, some do get consumed, spiritually consumed, or have their souls preyed upon. And, you know, it's like they become dehumanized, you know. So I think there is that. And the other analogy that I came up with a few years ago, but somebody else may have come up with it before me, was, and it's go, you know, it does go back to what David Icke has said, and I think he's got a lot of stuff, really interesting stuff that he's said over the years, this similar to this included, but I said it slightly differently, that when you look at this idea of, you know, these beings, whoever they are, reptilians or, you know, lower vibrational spirits or whatever you want to call them, what they're doing is creating polarization. And even now, you know, we're getting families polarized. Probably the biggest amount of polarization we've had for a long, long time, you know, going back to, you know, maybe the Second World War or the English Civil War, there's I don't think there's ever been as much interpersonal polarization as there is now. And if you look at any battery, you've got a plus on one end and a minus on the other. So you've got a polarized thing, and you can extract energy from it.
Yeah.
So is that, again, the fact that we are polarized over whatever issue, but this is mass polarization, are these beings, you know, exploiting us as a battery because we've got this positive and negative spiritual energy or emotional energy or whatever you want to call it,
and they're
exploiting that? You know, that was another thing I'd thought. This idea of deliberately separating the positive and negative to extract energy from it, which is, I think, slightly different to what David Icke and other people have said. You know, I do wonder about that. And, of course, this is just speculation, but it kind of gives you an explanation. But you then do have to accept that there are other non-physical entities that are manipulating us, you know, and then people don't like that sometimes because they can only think of that in terms of God and demons and, you know, and all of that type of thing. And I don't think it's that straightforward.
John Trudell actually said, and this is 20 years ago, he said that there are, he didn't say beings, but he just said there is an industrial ruling class, but there is an energy that is mining us. They're mining our energy. So he phrased it differently to where Icke was going, but he meant the same thing. That basically all roads point to Rome, and he's basically saying we're being mined. He was saying this 25, 30 years ago, even in 1969 when he was protesting for the Native Americans when he took over Alcatraz. But he said we're being mined, and people thought he was a lunatic. And then, you know, here we are. 20 years later, after he says all this, and his words are knocking on our door. It's just it's funny how people like that and Icke and various servers are all sort of heading in the same direction, saying we are being drained. When you look around at the world that we're in and we're living in, I can feel it. I've sensed it since I was a child. I knew there was something that wasn't quite right. I just knew. I just couldn't figure out what was going on, and it took me a while to get there. Listening to other people and going to visit the Native Americans taught me a lot.
I bet.
Because They've been around for, I mean, when I got on the plane to go to South Dakota, I had to change it. I don't know, was it Los Angeles? I'm not even sure where I was going to. And the Americans were there saying to me, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Your picture's gone, but it's okay. Yeah, they said, why are you going to, where are you going? I said, I'm going to South Dakota. And they said, but why are you going there? There's nothing there. And I said, I'm going there because there's nothing there that you would understand. Do you know what I mean? So it was an experience, and I learned a lot from those people, because they've been in touch with the land, and they've been around for such a long time that they're just tuned, they're honed in, they're dialed into to the universe and everything. And one of the most important things I learned from them was, which I still haven't grasped, that when an elder's talking, listen to what he says and don't interrupt. So while this elder was telling me that, and he was telling me what he was saying, I said, but, you know, Jim, what about this? And what about that? And then he'd say, what did I just tell you? What did I just tell you? One secret he said was that, you know, respect your elders and listen to what they say. And the second thing he said is, what is the first medicine, the first ever medicine on our planet? And I was going through all the ones I could think of. And I didn't, and he said, nope, because there's the first medicine that we all use, and it's just blatantly in front of you. And I was like, I don't know. And he said, water is one of the strongest medicines, and yet they're trying to pollute that and destroy that. And I was on a, I just couldn't believe the stuff I learned out there. You know, I was there for 2 weeks, and I'm in contact with them every single day. They text me, and I'm not lying to you, every single day I get a text from them, from the elder, just saying, love you, Sonny, how you doing? I hope all's well, you know. And they know what's going on over there as well, because they've been
That's interesting, because I didn't know that it was the Lakota Nation that you went, was it? Or... Yeah, I didn't know that they were in South Dakota. And that, of course, is the state that hasn't had any lockdowns or anything, has it?
So. Yeah, I mean, as far as I know, I mean, the thing is, some of the natives over there are actually going, oh, my God, there must be a virus, because people are dropping down dead. Now, whether that's to do with vaccines or are they using 5G, but I don't believe there's any virus, because I've met some, you know, you're on the group now, but with some of the people on the group in Glastonbury, we met lots and lots of people hugging and kissing, everyone's chatting away, no one's ill, you know. There is no pandemic at all, and a pandemic, if there was a pandemic, you'd be quarantining the ill, you wouldn't be quarantining the healthy. If
That's
you're quarantining
right.
the healthy, then we're looking at tyranny here, 100%, you know.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, there are many things that don't make sense, and I've got a friend in Greece, and she told me, you know, where she lived, a lot of people have suddenly fallen ill, and she had a friend who's a therapist.
Yeah.
And one particular day, you know, and he's never ill, he's very careful about what he eats and stuff.
Yeah.
And one particular day, he fell ill with some type of viral symptoms, and he even had to go to hospital. He wasn't in hospital very long, and he came out. And then the patients that he saw that day, or the clients, however you want to call them, they all got sick as well. And I know this person well. I've, you know, stayed in her house and stuff. And, you know, so she felt that something was going on. And so I wondered, well, are they targeting in certain areas?
Yeah.
And making, you know, because you mentioned 5G there. Now, I've sort of in two minds about the 5G, because 5G technology certainly isn't everywhere yet. Okay, now I suppose you could say, well, yes, it is everywhere, Andrew, because they've got the Starnet thing that Elon Musk put up, the array of satellites. Now, maybe it is everywhere now. I don't know how many have got up there. I don't know, you know, if they're putting them in certain orbits to cover the most densely populated areas of the Earth, or whether it is truly a global influence they've got now. I also don't know anything about the specification of these satellites as regards power levels, you know, and this sort of thing. To me, there are actually YouTube videos now of people out in the, you know, wilderness in the US, in places, you know, up in, I don't know, Colorado, where there's some quite remote areas and stuff. And you can now, you know, sort of buy a microwave dish to put outside your log cabin and get, you know, 100 megabit Ethernet link from the satellite. And it says, you know, you've got to stand at least 2 feet from the dish and not stand over it. I think this guy was explaining that. And he wasn't talking about anything to do with what we're talking about. He was just saying, oh, I was using this crappy Wi-Fi internet mast that's about 2 miles away or something, and I got about 1 megabit or something, he was saying. But now I've got my Starnet dish and I'm getting 100 megabits, you know. That's what he was talking about. Yeah. So, but is there other technology, for example, that we, you know, that's in the hands of the black world, which is like 5G, or it's just some directed energy technology, where they can, for example, say, right, well, we'll flick this switch now and we'll get, you know, this community here, you know, falling down with sickness. Is that what's happening? Is that how they're saying, well, you know, so we were talking a little bit about India, weren't we? Before we started recording, your friend over there, or the chap that you know over there, and maybe, you know, because I hadn't heard that, perhaps you want to tell that in a minute. But are they being zapped with some type of directed energy or something, or EMF from somewhere, you know?
I wouldn't be surprised, because, as you know, you've covered it with Richard D. Hall quite well, and we know Dr. Judy Wood's research. She's pointing at directed energy weapons. Now, when I talk to people about that, they laughed in my face 25 years ago. I know exactly how David Icke felt, and now I'm saying everything I said year and a half ago has come true. And it's not because I'm a prophet or a psychic. It's because I do agree. One thing that David Icke says: know the destination, then you'll see the journey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where they're taking you. If you know where they're taking you, you'll see. It's predicted. You can predict what's going to happen. So we know that they've got technology which is 70, maybe 100 years ahead. If you're looking at things like anti-gravity, so why not have directed energy weapons or HARP or things like that can manipulate on a cellular level. And I think they used to call it TIs, which is targeted individuals. Well, why not target huge amounts of people in one go? And I'm not sure how we can protect ourselves, but I think Alex Thompson would probably say, you know, because he's religious, and I think he would say that, you know, the God side will kick in, or that, you know, there's a God element there. And I have experienced certain things. I'm not religious, but I do believe in some sort of form of a creator or some force.
Oh, yeah.
And whenever I've asked for help, and it's only been a couple of times when I've needed it, for some reason it happens. Now, I don't know what that is, I have to say, but I don't believe in coincidence. I think there is something at work, and whenever I've asked for help, it's not with my mind or my brain. It's usually a distress call that comes from my heart saying I'm really in trouble here. And I did do it a few years ago when I was working in a job that I couldn't work in any longer. I was working in television, and I remember it clearly. 5 years ago, I was just breaking down, basically. Been there 10 years. My mum was deteriorating. I went to bed crying, and I looked up at the ceiling, and I said, whoever's up there, I really need help. I cannot do this. And I was crying when I said it. And I said, I need help. I can't do this anymore. I can't look after my mum and do this job. Can someone help me? I went in the next day, got escorted into HR, and they fired me pretty much, or made me redundant, gave me a check. And I walked out of there, and then I went, hold on a minute. That's what he was asking for.
Wow.
You asked for that. You asked for help, and you got it in a way that you didn't really expect. You got a bit of money, and now you've got freedom. You can look after your mum and do your own thing, and which is what I've been doing for 5 years. So I've had that happen to me a couple of times, and they could have got rid of me 10 years ago, 5 years ago, 5 months ago, but they got rid of me the day I asked for that help. Wow. I find that extremely odd, but there's something going on there. And I think there is a... I think Icke said this as well, that you communicate a lot of things with the universe, or with what's out there, with your heart, the heart field, the heart energy field, which is why we have a lot of heart disease, because they're targeting that. They target the heart, you know.
It's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
Going back to the idea of this coronavirus and 5G, you know, I was a bit sort of somewhat sceptical, and we've had people like... particularly Dr. Tom Cowan, who's come out with some interesting, you know, sort of thoughts on that. And it's worth listening to him, I think, to get a sort of handle around it. And then, of course, there is Dawn Lester and David Parker, who've written this massive book. It's 800 pages, called What Really Makes You. Well, they've talked about 5G. And then there's Arthur Furstenberg as well, who's written this book, The Invisible Rainbow. I've read those two books. And they're very interesting. There's one bit in the Arthur Furstenberg book, which I thought was a bit dodgy, where he interviews this woman who says she'd been severely affected by, you know, EMF radiation, and she had a mobile phone since she was like 12 or something. Mm-hmm. But then mm-hmm. she also says in the same description that her family was very, very poor. And I think I worked out that if she had a mobile phone when she was 12, you know, that was about 1990 or something, or 1991 or something like that. And mobile phones were very expensive then, or you know, hundreds of pounds, I think.
Yeah.
So that didn't stack up.
Yeah.
So you've got to be on the watch out for that. But then you have other things like this. I'm going to try and share my screen now, so you have to tell me if you can see this.
Okay.
You might have seen this story before. I don't know if that's come up for you. Can you see that?
Oh, hold on a minute. Yes, UK media outlets told not to promote baseless 5G coronavirus theories. Wow.
And that's an Ofcom warning. That they I forget the exact details of the story, but Ofcom put out this thing that said that in case of the Ofcom reported that the guest also used their appearance to launch a lengthy attack on a health professional in the NHS. And they talk about getting broadcasters banned or getting suspended or whatever for talking about 5G and coronavirus.
Right.
So you get stories coming out like that, you know, and you think, because if it was all rubbish, then you wouldn't need to put out stuff like that. The rubbish clearly would, you know, sort itself out and clearly be rubbish.
Yeah,
so when they're, you know, putting stuff out like that, you know, what's the deal? And so that made me very curious. And there's been a couple of sort of things like that similarly. I think, what's his face? Eamon Holmes, he made some comments, didn't he?
Yeah, about that.
And he got short shrift from, I don't think he got fired, thankfully, but, you know, he said, well, all I'm doing is making a comment. I'm not saying it's true or that it's false, you know, and I think he was perfectly justified in saying that. And I'm actually the same as Eamon Holmes. I don't know whether it's true or whether it's false, but I think there's some very serious considerations to be made along those lines, and they shouldn't be just blithely dismissed. You know, like most people are. And I certainly would freely admit I haven't really done enough investigation into it. And I think quite quickly you come up against a bit of a wall, because like we were saying about this SpaceX, you know, the StarX, we don't know how many of those there are necessarily. They might have published a figure on their website which says they've got whatever hundreds up there now, but we don't know how accurate that figure is. You know,
well, you know, Alex Thompson was saying that he said there is rumour that I'm going to have another interview with him soon, I think, in the next few days. But Alex said, there is rumour that Elon Musk is turning to the, quote, good side. And what I wanted to know about that was that if that's the case, why is he still sending up 5G satellites?
Mm.
And why is he investing in Neuralink, which is about having us all plugged into AI?
That's right.
I don't understand that. I mean, he must know something I don't know, but I'm looking at, you want us plugged into AI and you're sending up 5G satellites. That's alarm bells for me, you know.
Exactly. And I mean, there was a similar thing with Trump, wasn't there? You know, because I started to follow the Q narrative a bit, and I would say I believed it all. I was kind of hopeful. I must admit, getting this dose of hopium, you know, as they call it. And that's quite a good way of putting it. And there's a lot of very interesting stuff in the Q narrative, and I still haven't like completely kicked it into touch. I know some people have, but I think a big sort of drawback for me was when Trump was promoting the vaccine. And, you know, and there was another chap that I know who was following that. And, you know, Trump really bigged up the vaccine and this Operation Warp Speed and all of this. And I had quite a big problem with that. Particularly as he was promoting the hydroxychloroquine, wasn't it, early on in sort of April, May time, I think it was last, May 2020.
Yeah.
I thought, well, that's interesting. And he even said, Trump even said, oh, this is going to go away without a vaccine. He actually said that. Where does he stand on all of this? And then, and then latterly, somebody published an article, I think in the last sort of month or so, where they were trying to explain all of this. And they said, oh, yeah, he did all this, you know. And he realised what he had to do was he had to get this vaccine out so that all the people would, you know, who wanted the vaccine would have it, and they just, you know, suffer the effects. And then everyone would realise that it was a vaccine that was really terrible, and that would wake everyone up, you know, and that's why he did it. Again, it's sort of a plausible narrative in one sense, but...
I've never really followed the queue thing because I remember Ike saying, don't go down that road. It's a disaster. It's basically a controlled opposition psyop sort of thing. I mean, that's where he did explain why he said that. And I can't remember what it was now. But one thing I did get out of Ike, which, I mean, a lot of people, I'm a bit worried about shills and disinformation assets. And I did ask Alex that, and he doesn't seem to think that there is a disinformation assets at that level anymore. He did say why, I think, in the interview when I might have sent to you. But every time I listen to Ike, he seems to make sense to me. It's just a feeling. And one thing I got from him was, and I quote him, be open to all possibilities. And that is one of the strongest things and lessons I've learned in the whole of this research, is that those words, just be open to all possibilities. Might be 5G, might not be, might be this, might be that, but be open to it. Don't narrow yourself down to saying it can't be anything and it's got to be this, because that's when you fall into the hole, you know.
Absolutely. I mean, I would go along with that as well. But the, you know, the old saying, don't be so open, you know, so open-minded that your brains fall out, you know, so that's that you've got to be careful of that as well. Certainly with David Icke, I agree. You know, he comes up with some good stuff and he's got some good research. But there's also something, certainly in regards to 9/11, and when we did the programmes with Richard.
I remember I watched
You know, and I met him. I met David Icke and I explained all the stuff to him for 2.5 hours. It's not like I was just sent him a random email, you know, one day. Oh, yeah. Really? Yeah. I met him in 2008. And we talked about lots of stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, I showed him the Hurricane Erin stuff on my laptop because I had it with me. I was in his hotel room and I showed it him, you know, and that was in 2008 before that had really been published widely. We were only just starting to publish that then. You know, he never came back to me on it. And then the next book that came out, he had all the controlled demolition stuff in the World Trade Center, which I'd explained to him was a decoy, you know. And
that's interesting.
He still didn't get it right in his trigger book, you know, and I'd mentioned his, Richard and I are pretty sure that he watched that show we did about him. We know just from comments he'd made on his website, not about that particular show, but he posted certain things which seemed to indicate that he'd watched it, you know, and he's never responded to it.
Do you think he is controlled opposition, in your opinion?
To a degree. There's something about him where... Is he paying money? Is he threatened? I don't know, but is he self-censoring? I think he must be self-censoring at the very least. And why is he doing that for somebody like him who should be totally, you know, free of anything? He shouldn't, you know, why would he be self-censoring, even if that's what he's doing? You know, so there are definitely some question marks, certainly in relation to 9/11, and perhaps, you know. And perhaps I can only say that for sure because that's one of the things that I know the most about. Like, I know more about 9/11 and the workings in that than I do about, you know, virology or viruses or, you know, the Wuhan lab or whatever it is. I don't know much about that, but I do know a lot about 9/11. I spent years researching that, you know, with Dr. Judy Wood. And we had some long, long conversations, like 3-hour conversations, you know, 5 times a week sort of thing, you know, at one point. So we did a lot of research into that, and certainly with Dr. Morgan Reynolds as well. I shouldn't miss his name out of this, you know. So we know a lot about that, and I also know a lot about the figures, like, you know, Fetzer and Jones and Gage and all these other people. You know, I got quite a lot of background on them, really, from various conversations we had with them, research we did, research with other people that are apparently friends with people like Fetzer. And Ike, you know, people like Ike just didn't really seem to have an interest in that at all, and still don't, you know.
That's worrying. That does worry me. I mean I like his stuff, and I like his passion and his energy, and I'm thinking he seems to be really believing in what he believes in, unless it's all an act. And I don't know, I can't pinpoint it.
No, I don't think it's that. I think he does believe it, and I think a lot of what he says is true.
Yeah.
But with the way, there's a couple of things really here that I'd say. First one is that, and I've said this lots of times, and I'll keep saying it, if you do some research and you come to a conclusion and you talk about that conclusion, that's fine. You know, you're only being honest, you're doing your best with whatever it is. However, if somebody comes along and shows you evidence and proves that what you said is wrong, for whatever reason, you know, because you know the things have changed, or new witnesses have come out, or the original information you had was incomplete or wrong, you should then come out and say, "Oh, sorry, got that wrong. Here's why I got it wrong. I did my best at the time, but I messed it up." And this is exactly what Lloyd Pye did. Who was Lloyd Pye, who did the research into the Star Child skull? He originally came out and said, "Star Child, we think it's a human alien hybrid. Here's why I think it's that. Here's what we had done. Here's the bum, bum, bum. That's why we think that." Then a few years later, he said, "Actually, we've now got new information. What I said before was wrong. And we now think it is really an alien." And he explained why. He actually came out and he corrected himself based on new information. David Icke, to my knowledge, has never done that. Neither has Alex Jones. Neither have a lot of other researchers. They just don't do that. They don't do it. Because, and this is because they become quote unquote leaders. And what's the problem with leaders? Is they're like politicians. They don't admit they were wrong, right?
Yeah.
That, and so I think you can talk about being paid or being on the government payroll or whatever it is. Well, I don't know. Maybe he is. I have no idea. But the point is, the end result is that he continues to put out either false or incomplete information, certainly about 9/11. And the same happened with that bloody Arizona Wilder story that he put out.
The mind control, MKUltra.
Right. Now, this is the way it works, you see. Now, he was told by one of his co-researchers, what was his name? Oh, God, I should remember his name because it's in a book. It's in one of the books. Okay. Trying to remember his name. David Icke wrote that book called The Biggest Secret, and he was collaborating with another researcher who I think was Brian. Brian was his first name. I can't remember his second name.
By the way, Andrew, your picture's gone, mate. I don't know if you know that, just to let you know.
What I'm going to try and do is I might try and restart the video.
Yeah, it's been gone for about 10 minutes now, maybe more.
It might be. Is it back now?
Yeah, it's back. Not that it really matters, but yeah, but go on, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So he was told by this Brian, this other guy, that they'd looked at this Arizona Wilder story, and she, as you said, she was the ritual abuse witness. Yeah. She said that the Queen had been involved in satanic ritual abuse, and I think Arizona Wilder was the woman that said she saw the Queen change into a reptilian, I think. Now, Icke was warned by this other researcher, whose first name I think was Brian. I forget the name. I should go and research this. He said, "Look, David, I think this story is bogus. I wouldn't put it in the book, you know." Right. And he explained all the reasons why.
Yeah.
Da di da di da. And I put it in the book anyway, and it's still there. And then it came out a couple of years later that this Arizona Wilder, which wasn't her real name, I think her real name was Jennifer something or other.
Yeah.
And she said, "Actually, that story I told, it's not actually true, or not parts of it are not true, you know." And David Icke's never acknowledged that, to my knowledge. And and so we've got this. To me, he was that story was put against him, same as the as what Richard found out with the Credo Mutua story. Credo Mutua was almost certainly planted to disinform Icke, and Icke ran with it. Almost certainly. And I mean, because they tried to do it with John Mack, you know, the UFO abduction researcher.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, Richard found all that out when we did the Icke program, because John Mack went to South Africa to interview some witnesses about what they'd seen. You know, I think it was a school that they went to, and a flying saucer had landed at the back of the school, and all the kids had done drawings of it, and blah, 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 blah. And John Mack had gone to investigate that case. And Credo Mutua just turns up on this TV program with John Mack, or around the same time.
Yeah.
And tries to get him to talk about these reptilian beings or something. I forget the exact details, but it's in the program that we did about David Icke with Richard.
Yeah.
And we think that Credo Mutua was then, you know, sent along to Icke to put this story to Icke about the reptilian beings. So we think that a lot of what that was basically disinformation. That's not the same as saying that there aren't any reptilian beings. There might be, but I just think that the stories that were told to Icke were either partly true or not true at all.
Right.
And And Ike has never admitted that. He's never said, well, actually, I did my best at the time.
Yeah.
You know, but actually, that was probably bogus. And, you know, I don't believe that anymore now. I believe this, or I'm not as sure as I was. You know, and I've had to do that. I've had to do that about 9/11, because I was fooled for 18 months by the bombs in the building story. And then I found out that, well, that was wrong. And I was used to put out disinformation, you see. That's how I know how it works. Because I was used by Stephen E. Jones, the physicist, to put out this disinformation story about thermite. I helped him because I thought I was doing a good thing, you know.
Yeah.
But I don't have any problem with admitting that I was wrong. What I did was inadvertently helping to promote another lie at a time I didn't realise it, you know.
Yeah. And that's the one thing I like about Richard D. Hall, where I have seen him on occasions retract stuff and say, I was wrong about this. I did think, I don't know, UFO landed in so-and-so, or this happened related to with extraterrestrials. And now I'm beginning to find that information that was not true. And he has corrected himself on a few of his videos, which I respect him for that.
Yeah. And this is the problem with the way that a lot of society works. Politicians say, oh, actually, sorry, I was wrong about that. You know, I shouldn't have done that. And now we need to do this, you know. And I'm not talking about criminal activities or anything like that. I'm talking about just basic stuff. And very few people in authority will do that. That's one of the fundamental problems. And that's why I think if you're talking about being, love and light and all of that stuff, you should admit your mistakes. If you are shown to have made a mistake, you have to accept responsibility for that. It's not about, you know, trying to go after somebody and punish them for it.
No,
about saying you made a mistake, you did your best at the time, and you're willing to take, you know, the consequences of that, you know, with an open sort of heart, as it were. And, you know, and ask for help if you need help, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So many people don't do that, you know.
Can I ask you another question? I asked this to Alex as well, but do you think that I asked Alex this, does he think that the economy is going to collapse, and he said yes between 3 and 5 years. What's your view on that?
I don't know. I think that's what Alex said is, you know, supported by a lot of other people. Certainly a number looking at, I don't have much knowledge of finances and stuff really. So Alex, I think Alex is more up on that sort of stuff than I am, but just looking at the old simple expression, funny money. Where is all this money coming from? How is it suddenly possible? You know, the government's been saying for years, oh, we can't, you know, build this or that, you know, with no money. But then all of a sudden they've got all this money to furlough, you know, whatever it is, 50% of the working population for 6 months, pay their salaries, 80% of salary, and the rest of it, and all these other things. What is it, 3.2 trillion? I think Richard came out with the UK national debt, it was 3.2 trillion. That's just funny money, you know.
Yeah.
It's funny money. So something's got to give. You know, we either just go along with the system where we can have as much money as we want created out of thin air, or something is really going to, you know, go really seriously wrong. So maybe Alex is right, you know, I don't know. But maybe something else will come in and, you know, change that. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, another thing John Trudell said, this is slightly off topic. He said, The world that we live in is governed by energy, frequency, vibration. If you can control those three things, you can control humanity. Would you say that would be true in your opinion?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, what I put in my second 9/11 book, 9/11, Holding the Truth, was what somebody sent to me. A chap that I know who lives in Wales, and again I've quoted him in the book, but I couldn't remember his exact words, but it was pretty close.
Yeah.
And he said that what happened on 9/11 at the World Trade Center involved the forces from which life itself arises, and that's, I think, ties in with that, the idea of energy and vibration controlling humanity. I think he's right.
Wow.
And so yeah, absolutely. But I think what you said there, that can be done. You can control that either using, you know, your mental and psychic capacities, if you know how to do it. And I think some of these yogis and the very advanced people that do the types of yoga and that sort of thing, and know about chi,
Yeah.
You can do it with that. You can also do it with technology if you have the right technology. I think you can do it with both.
Yeah.
And I think people like Colonel John Alexander, who used to be the head of the non-lethal weapons program in the US, he knows John Hutchison, who's the researcher that's done these anti-gravity and levitation demonstrations in the past. He knew this. I think Alexander knew that back in 1983. You know, that you can do this sort of ether bending, ether manipulation. You can either do it with mental abilities and psychic abilities, or you can do it with technology or a combination thereof. You know,
right.
That's what I think. And I think some of that is being used right now to do. Some of what is going on now, I think, is black magic. That's what I would call it. You know.
Yeah.
It might be a clumsy phrase, or you know, whatever connotations it may or may not have. You know, I don't know. But that's what I think is going on. Dark magic. You know, evil spells being cast. I mean, it does seem like people are under a spell, doesn't it? When you can't.
Yeah, it does.
Know, you just can't. You cannot get through to them with just basic stuff. You know, like they've created this thing now. Oh, if people die of COVID. It's the worst thing ever. People die of the vaccine. Not a problem. It's fine. You know, people are going to die anyway.
Yeah.
What? You know.
I know.
This is to me is just when you get it to that level, that is some type of weird black magic or brainwashing, as far as I can tell.
Yeah, and another thing is there is people like you and myself who are awake to this, and there's many others that are not. And what I've noticed, I've lost, I'd say 95% of my friends have gone from this event that's happened in the last year and a half, and I thought it was just me, but now, you know, I know a lot of people where I live, and they're experiencing the same thing, and it looks like there's a parting of ways. I mean, in the process, they say choose your side. That's definitely happened. I haven't got that many friends anymore, being honest with you. I've got one or two now, and that is it. I've made a lot of friends in Glastonbury because we're all on the same page.
Right.
We're all looking at doing, at the moment, finding a land acquisition at the moment, and we're going to build, I think I mentioned this to you, an off-grid community where we're going to have our own yurts and our own shepherd huts and log cabins, and even have a triage centers where we can do basic medical treatment and a community center in the land. So we have quite a lot of people working on that because we know we're going to have to gravitate to that sort of place to get away from this. When this happened, and I knew this was coming, the alarm bell started going off, and I held a meeting with these people, and I said, look, this we've got to do this and to try and make this work. And even if they don't live off grid, they're still on there to try and contribute in some way, whether they're lawyers, researchers, scientists, doctors, nurses, but they're aware of it. But the parting of the ways from family and friends was a shock to me. And there was people I know personally who know about all of this. I'm not going to mention their names. They're not in the group, but they know about this. They've been studying it, and then they go and get their vaccine. And I've stopped talking to those people because I felt disrespect to the human family from what they did. It was almost an insult, a slap in the face. And I've known these people for a long time, and you know there's an agenda, and you walked in and got a vaccine. It was almost, how dare you? I mean, I haven't fallen out with them I just don't communicate with them anymore because I felt like I can't operate on that frequency now because you're contributing to our enslavement. I've got to break away. And I'm seeing that through so many, mainly women as well. They're all splintering off. And there's this massive, it feels like when you're at school in the playground and a teacher says, we're going to play football. And then the guys pick their teams. And then everyone, you start seeing all the players, all the people split up in the pitch. And you see the parting of the opposition. And I've never seen it like that before. I'm like, I never thought I'd fall out with some of these people or agree to disagree. And we go our separate ways, including family. It's ended. And I had to learn to let go is what I learned. One of the words I learned when I was with the Native Americans is learn to let go of people. You don't own them. They don't own you. And everything is temporary is one of the things they said to me. And I had to walk away from that. And I'm hearing that now all over emails coming in, people telling me I'm no longer getting on my husband. I think I'm going to have to leave and split up with him because he wants to go and get a vaccine, or he has been vaccinated. I'm worried about spillage or leakage from a vaccine now, because we're hearing numerous reports of people coming in bleeding, women having we've got menopause and starting bleeding, women having, you know, women's problems, and they're like, well, where's this coming from? You know,
yeah, I've heard the same.
And I've got two carers here that are, have that situation now, and they're like, well, what the hell's going on? Why am I getting this? And I'm like, you know, David Icke did mention that, and I thought, well, I haven't met anyone, I've not experienced that, and now I'm starting to experience it here. So yeah, the parting of the ways. I don't know. Have you experienced that yourself, or
not? I've not personally experienced the women's issues and things.
No, I don't mean the women's. I mean the parting of friendships.
For me, it's been a bit different because I've been quite reclusive really for the last few years, because I've never been a particularly social animal.
Okay.
You know, for example, I'm teetotal. Yep. So I've never been a regular pub goer.
Right.
You know, a lot of people say, "Oh, you know, get come out of work or whatever," and you know they'll go and have a drink or whatever, and Friday night they'll go and have a drink or go and watch a football match and have a drink. Not interested in football. I like going to a pub, you know, but usually we'd go to have a meal. We wouldn't go to drink. None of my wife does very light drinking. She'll have an occasional glass of wine.
Same as me.
So I never had that, you see, and I've been a home worker. I've worked at home for since my daughter was born, and that was 1997. Okay. So I haven't had a social group of people that I work with particularly. I know the odd person here and there, but then when I started getting into all the alternative research heavily, which was in 2003. There were a few more friends that basically said back then, don't send me this stuff, Andrew. I said, okay then, bye. You know,
bye.
But you know, not in a nasty way, a bit like you. I just sort of said, well, I'm not going to fall out with them, but I'm just not going to bother anymore. I can't be bothered. You know,
it's wasted energy.
It is. I mean, to me, I could just call it laziness, but I'm the sort of person, particularly now. And in one sense, it's quite selfish. In another, it's maybe quite altruistic. It's where you get into this duality, I suppose. But there is so much to explore now on the internet, and so many things that there's frivolous stuff as well. Like, what was it I was watching the other day? I'm trying to think of a frivolous example. Crikey, what was I watching? I used to watch Space 1999.
Oh, I used to watch that, I love that,
And just the other day, I found a really very well-produced video about how what happened between the first series and the second series of Space 1999, which were quite different, you know. And I found it very interesting, because I used to love that program. I remember feeling really depressed when it stopped being on, you know. I think I was about 12 when that was on the TV. So I was just thinking, this was a program that was made in 1975. It's like 46 years old almost. And this is a new video that somebody's made, you know, over 40 years later, about that flipping TV series from years ago, you know. That's what I mean. That's what I'm thinking. There's all this minutiae. You can find out all the minutiae about what was happening between the producers and the cast, and, you know, all in this video. You're thinking, why is there even a video about that? You know, it's a good video as well, you know. And you can find so much stuff like that. And I found out there's been a whole sequence, for example, of videos about what was behind songs and popular music. I think they've done, they're going to do 2,000 of these videos overall, like the song Sylvia's Mother by Dr. Hook, I think was the group from the 70s. Sylvia's mother is a real person, and in this video they go and interview Sylvia's mother, and they ask her about, you know, the guy that wrote the song, you know. So you can find out who Sylvia's mother actually was, you know, in this song you heard as a kid, you know, 45 years ago, that you'd never even thought Sylvia's mother was a real, but you can see her on video interviewed. You know, that's the extraordinary thing with the access of information we've got now, you know, and you can extend that to just about anything, you know.
Do you think Andrew, that they're gonna pull the plug on the net? Because I've been hearing that rumors a lot about pulling it.
Well, there is the Cyber Polygon exercise, which is scheduled for July the 9th, isn't there?
Yeah. You know?
So I don't know. Maybe, you know, it's been talked about before. Certainly, we had Obama's kill switch. Do you remember that story from a few years ago?
That never happened.
Yeah. But what did happen, of course, is I remember talking to people about this story now and again, but it's almost forgotten because it's in the early days of broadband internet. And it was the big outages of, like half of London losing its power. I think that happened in 2003, didn't it? It was a massive power outage in London. And then I think 2 or 3 days before or after, same thing happened in Paris. And there was no explanation given for this. And I think same happened in like New York or something, or some other, or Frankfurt or one of the other big German cities. So in other words, there were these massive power outages in big cities, all within about 3 days of one another. So was that some kind of, you know, trial of a black world system? So it could happen. It could happen. It could, you know, I'm not saying it could easily happen, but it's a possibility. I think the technology exists to allow that to happen or to cause it to happen. So I think it just depends on the intent of those that are in control of that technology, you know.
Where do you think, I won't keep you for too long, but where do you think, or what's the end game in your opinion? I mean, obviously other researchers have other ideas about that. What do you think they're heading us to? What direction?
Well, I mean, the cabal, if you look at the people that seem to have the most influence at the moment, like Gates and Klaus Schwab, and the World Economic Forum, certainly, you know, they're coming out and being presented as having a lot of influence, and people like George Soros, then it appears they're following a technocrat's agenda, doesn't it? Which is this agenda which seemed to get going in the 1930s particularly, you know, where we'll have a world controlled by AI, and everyone will have a social credit score and, you know, be treated on that basis. You'll all be part of the Internet of Bodies, as it's called. Not even Internet of Humans, I noted when I saw that story about a year ago. They don't even bother to call it Internet of Humans. They call it Internet of Bodies, which I thought was quite interesting. We've got all the 5G technology coming in, and people are plugged into their smartphones, and I'm not, you know, I'm not that different in that regard. I have a smartphone and I use it fairly regularly. So, you know, we can see all the signs. We've got Agenda 21, which was put out there in 92, Agenda 2030. But we also have the other interesting things that people like Klaus Schwab have said. Like they said, they've talked about COVID-9 and the Great Reset, of course, but they said it's a very narrow window of opportunity. And I'm thinking, Klaus, why is it narrow? Surely with all your money and power and influence, you could make it as wide as you wanted, mate. You know,
so that is strange.
And a couple of them have said that. Why is it narrow? Why does it have to be narrow?
Well, you know, Ike mentioned that, and he said something to do with, I don't know if it's to do with the Earth, the universe, or some sort of vibration frequency change. Maybe. That they have a narrow window to do what they need to do, which is why.
This is it.
I think, and I don't know what research was this, David Icke as well. I mean, who knows if he's correct, but he said there was a whistleblower from somewhere saying that this was supposed to happen in 2050. Then it was brought back to 2030. And then people got greedy and said it's got to be 2020.
Yeah, I've heard similar bits.
Internal conflicts within the cabal, if you like.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, you know, this again is hearsay, isn't it? So we don't know. And then, of course, there are other things that you hear about. Another thing that people have talked about recently, you've probably heard, is the fake alien invasion. So if the COVID scam doesn't get the required results quickly enough now, they're going to pull out the fake alien invasion. And again, we've seen some minor signs of that with this regurgitation of the the tic-tac-toe story coming out. And I think even Tucker Carlson did a did a show on that a couple of weeks ago, a month or so ago, didn't he?
That's correct.
We've got all this to the Stars Academy by run by ex-CIA people and all that stuff. So, and Dark Journalist, actually, if you've watched Daniel List, he's done some good stuff on that. But one of the things I was going to say is that few people talk about the advanced technology, particularly as I like to talk about on 9/11, because I was saying this to somebody a couple of days ago. I wonder why David Icke and Alex Jones don't really talk about what really happened on 9/11. David Icke certainly mentioned it in his book, but he got certain details wrong, and it's kind of like he mentions it, but he doesn't get it. He doesn't get it. He doesn't get what's at stake, or he doesn't fully bring out the significance of it.
Yeah.
And that this is a technology which we know is real. It's not speculation, and it can be proved to be real. Yeah. And I feel that I felt for a long time that if enough people knew about it, it's a way out of all this new world order. You know, this technology can be used to, you know, it can be used to pretty much change everything.
Yeah.
It can change propulsion, it can change healthcare, it can change the face of the planet, you know. And I think the people that have got this technology know this. That's why they've worked so hard to keep it covered up. But it is no longer covered up now. It's actually been public knowledge. You know, Dr. Wood's still with us. I'm still here. You know, you can know about this.
Yeah.
And I think it can bring in a completely different world, and a world of abundance, as I've said, and others have said this as well, not just me, but a world of abundance instead of a world of scarcity. You know,
it's funny as well, Andrew, that the scientist Nikola Tesla, all of his research boxes and were stolen or confiscated by the FBI.
I think some of that story was told slightly incorrectly, because not everything was stolen. So maybe lots of important stuff was, but you know, there's a nice YouTube video which didn't have many views when I last looked at it, of a chap. He actually rebuilt one of Tesla's experiments from Tesla's notes, you know, and he was explaining how he did it. Nothing particularly complicated, you know, but he got it to work, and it had the effect, and it had the effect of transmitting energy in an anomalous manner. And it's relatively easy to build this if you've got a few hundred dollars and, you know, the right sort of tools.
Yeah.
And he did it. This guy did it. He's on YouTube, and he shows you it working and stuff. And so I think things like that are sometimes put out, say, all Tesla's notes were stolen, so that nobody goes looking for them, and they can actually find some of them in the local library if they.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Get out. Yeah, I think that's true. And it's, I think sometimes stories like that are put out and people repeat them, and it makes you think. It's like these stories saying, well, there's no evidence of a crashed flying saucer. No, there is evidence of a crashed flying saucer, actually. It's just that people tell you it's all fake, when actually when you look into it, it's not fake. Oh, there is no evidence of a real alien ever having been there. Well, have you heard about the Starchild skull? No. Oh, that's been debunked. No, it hasn't been debunked. You go and look at the actual truth about it, and you find it hasn't been debunked. So that you get that as well. People will put out a story, even in the alternative research community, that such and such never came to anything, you know. Mm-hmm. Or it's not important, etc., etc. So, and you know, I've written about that in my books quite a lot, where people will make statements that are not actually true. You know, funnily enough, we know that, but that activity is not just limited to the mainstream scientists. It happens in the alternative research community as well. The people say, "Well, that's not true," and actually, they know it is true. You know, or they don't know it's not true; they just assume it is. You know. You know, this has been the big problem with Dr. Judy Wood's research. Oh, that's been debunked, says somebody who believes that bombs in the building blew up the World Trade Center. Sorry, it hasn't been debunked. You've been fooled. You've been listening to the wrong people again.
I'm concerned that David Icke didn't cover that.
He has covered some of it in his latest book, the last book he did, The Trigger, but it's still wrong. I've done a critique of that, you know, on my website. And he never, you know, he's never contacted me. You know, if he contacted me and wanted to write that up, And there's another researcher who I won't mention at this point, who said he was going to contact me about 9/11 research and for his next book. And he's never contacted me. That was about 3 years ago that he said it, you know, and I met him face to face. Because, because like I said a couple of minutes ago, what happened on 9/11 affects everything, you know, the whole lot, because it's to do with energy, which is the underlying thing, you know, viruses or lack of viruses, life force. What happened on 9/11 involves all of that, you know, weather, you know, climate change, Agenda 21, go back to 9/11. So, you know,
Can I ask you a question here as well? This is sort of semi-related. Do you know a researcher? He's an ex-police officer called David Palaides.
Yes.
Right, I followed him. He's not into conspiracies. He's not into any of that. He just wants to find out why people are going missing. Mm-hmm. And over the years of listening to him, he's now coming to the conclusion, which is why I isolate him out of most, from David Icke, from you, from Richard D. Hall, from everyone, is because he's not into conspiracies. He just wants to know about missing people. And now he's saying, I think there's something paranormal going on here, and I'm a police officer. You know, I'm an investigated, you know, I was a police officer, now I'm investigating missing people, and I would never have considered this, but now I'm looking at the fact that I'm beginning to think that there is a good and bad force at work. That was the bombshell, if you want to call it a bombshell, for me, when he said that, that someone of that caliber who's coming as an investigator, as a police officer, not looking into aliens, not looking into anything like that, and is just realizing the pennies drop that I can't explain how these people are disappearing. If you listen to his work or watch his work, people go missing. And when they go missing, the weather changes. Now, that's weather modification. Someone's using a weather modification device there. Even he's coming to the belief that there's something not right. Soon as we send in search and rescue, the weather comes out of nowhere and disrupts that. People disappear at a point of separation instantly, and the other person can't find them. Not even within earshot. They can't be found when they call for them. And then an hour or two later, they're finding children like, you know, 2,000 feet up a mountain, and they can't climb up there. So he's like, there's something, someone has a technology to somehow take people. And now it's evolved from just being in the bushes and in the woods and in remote places to buildings now, where he's finding that people are going missing, walking into a house or walking into a room somewhere and never coming out. And CCTV, and there was one case where a police officer went to investigate this. And sorry, my mum's just screaming as a carer, just trying to clean her, so apologies for that. He goes into a room and completely disappears. And Palaides is saying, well, the only way he could escape is jumping out the window and he'd kill himself, or walking out of that room, and he never walked out of that room under CCTV. And the police officer, not David, but another police officer who's investigating, it said to this day, it baffles him. And they're getting cases of this where people just completely vanish. And he's sort of putting the case together where they seem to be of a certain genetic race or breed, or they seem to have certain skills, where it's professors or it's scientists or athletes that are going missing. The speculation was, is it a breakaway civilization that's been created and they're taking these people because they need them, or harvesting DNA? And they're found, some of them are found dead in unusual circumstances where they got broken bones or a broken skull, but there was nowhere for them to have fallen, which means they fell from the sky and something's chucked them out. Craft of whatnot, I don't know, but he's someone to keep an eye out for. He's genuine. He's just lost his son as well through suicide due to the COVID situation, so he's quite emotional when he talks on there. But his research has got nothing to do with what me, you, or anyone else looks into. We're looking into other things, but he's specifically trying to target what you know, why are these people going missing, and obviously you know that. But he's now going on to the fact that there's something spiritual going on here, and he even said in a lot of his videos, I think this is a spiritual warfare going on here, and there's technology going on here that I can't understand. And that's someone coming outside of conspiracy theories, if you want to call it that, not into anything that Ike or myself or anyone else is looking into. He's just looking at, just simply looking at, what, why missing people going missing, and I'm trying to find that out. And now it's leading him to believe that there's something paranormal, supernatural and spiritual going on here, and he does think there's a conflict between good and bad.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't heard him recently. I listened to a couple of his interviews, but I found it a bit difficult to kind of pin him down on anything, really, because a lot of what he was saying was anecdotal, you know, and they didn't seem to have a lot of other photographic or documentary evidence to sort of, you know, flesh out what he was saying.
Right.
Which isn't to say that what he was saying wasn't true. I think it was just more difficult for me to kind of feel comfortable that he had all the picture. But it's interesting what you were saying there about him coming to the conclusion that technology is involved, because, of course, that sort of ties in with what Richard D. Hall was talking about with the abduction cases in Wales. And then maybe if David Pollides has come across cases similar to that, but he's somehow not really found the UFO connection.
Yeah.
You know, and Richard has looked at some of these human mutilation cases and stuff. Maybe that's similar to what Paul Ides has found.
So, yeah. He has come across that as well. New territory for him. So, but do you are you fully on with the alien UFO sort of, do you think that is a genuine phenomena that's going on, or because I've heard that it's also government projects, black projects that are doing what they're doing, they're blaming it on UFOs.
Well, so anyone else wants to read my Acknowledge book, you'll find out a lot of what I think about that and what I've concluded based on the evidence. So I think it's certainly no single explanation. I do think there are black programs. I certainly studied the abduction phenomena quite a bit, and I think that is partly CIA or black ops run, but I think there's probably real aliens involved as well, you know, and there's various reasons for coming to that conclusion, you know, not least of which is stuff that's been talked about for centuries, you know, and what's, for example, in Enuma Elish, some of the ancient scriptures. And, you know, I think there is off-world interference or manipulation of human development. That's what Roy Pye was talking about in Sitchin. But again, I broke down what Sitchin wrote about, and I think Sitchin was deliberately putting out some disinformation. You know, the Anunnaki were flying around in rockets, really, Zechariah, you know, really. Yeah. But you happen to put it in those terms, I think, because it was written in the 1970s.
Yeah, of course.
You know, they were talking about Apollo rockets all the time. And either he did it knowing that it was false, or for some reason he couldn't think beyond this rocket technology. But even that, the fact that Sitchin would say that they were in fiery rockets, to me seems ridiculous for a man of his intellect. He would be familiar with the UFO issue, surely, at least to the basic level that UFOs are not rockets, and they don't appear like rockets because everyone knows what a flipping rocket is. You know? And there's some other stuff in Sitchin's books, and then you find out, for example, that there's a film which features a load of people dressed in Masonic regalia, and one of them looks very much like Zechariah Sitchin in this video clip. You know, you found out stuff like that, and you put it all together, and again you get back to this notion of limited hangout. People are putting out some of the truth, they make a name for themselves, but then they don't correct themselves, they don't augment what they've originally written and say, oh, thanks, Mr. Smith, for sending me this, you know, bit of research that props up what I was saying, moves that bit, you know, to show that bit was wrong, but this bit is actually correct, and your, you know, bit shows it's correct, or shows more likely it's correct. Sitchin doesn't do that. Ike doesn't do that, you know.
Yeah.
Very few researchers do that, back to my point, what I was saying earlier on. And that's what I've tried to do. That's what I've tried to do in the Acknowledge book that I've written, to cover all that alien stuff, you know. You know, people can go and read my books for free in PDF form at checktheevidence.com. You just find the links to the books down.
You know what I like about that as well? It's with Palladius as well. His most of his information is all free. His videos are free. Yours is free to look at. And so is Richard D. Hall's to a certain extent, and many other people. But there are, I'm not going to mention them on here, but there are researchers, and you've mentioned them through this video anyway, that will put out information, and then to find out more, you've got to pay. I find that really quite dirty, really, because we're trying to find out what's going on, and you're now saying to find out more about this information, subscribe and pay this money. Mm. I know they've got to make a living, I get that, but I just, you know, these are well-known researchers, you know, and you've mentioned them in this. So that's why I've got a bit of a red card on these guys. I'm like, you know, why are you charging us to find out a bit more about what a doctor or a scientist is saying? I don't think that's right, because we need to be given information free. And what some people do is they say, there's no charge. If you want to make a donation, feel free. That's a better way to do it. So if you want to donate to what you're doing, then donate, but the material's free. And there's a guy that has a site called, I think it's called Top Five. It's more fun, but he does UFOs. He does lots of things. And he says, I have other research material that I've worked on. And if you subscribe to the channel and become a member, a proper member, you have to pay. You can pay a fee. But if you can't afford it, email me and you'll get it for free. That's a great way to do that.
Yeah,
got a lot of respect for doing that. But some of these guys that do what they do, it's like have a little taste and now pay for it if you want more. Not on, in my opinion. And that's why when you just said that you can read it for free, a lot of people that are going to listen to this will say, oh, they'll have enough respect for you for that, because it's nice that you've done that.
Yes, that's what I found that works for me. I mean, obviously I've got fortunate enough to be employed, you know, make a living from other stuff.
Yeah,
it just means I have to work a bit harder, you know, perhaps. And but yeah, I mean, I have a lot of sympathy for people that do charge for material, but I think there are various ways of doing it, and some ways, as you've described, are better than others. Yeah. And certainly in my experience, I give away stuff free, but some people do still want to pay, and they will pay, and they do, and they have paid me, even though I've given stuff away free. You know, and they buy the books because they want a physical copy. And I just say, well, I can't afford to give the physical copies away, really, because they might cost a fiver or a tenner a time. Yeah. So, you know, that, you know, I might make a pound off each, you know, a couple of pounds off a £10 book, you know. Yeah. But then I've got to package it all up and put it in the post, you know, so that takes me time.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've got to invest some time in that. But overall, that all balances out. So, you know, I think it's worthwhile, you know, having some stuff that's free and some stuff that you pay, you know, you pay for, and then it seems to suit everybody then, or well, not everybody, but suits a greater number of people.
Just one more thing before we go as well. One, would you be interested in doing another chat again sometime?
Anytime you like, yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. And the second thing, just for people that who might listen and watch this, what's your background? Just so people know what you do, what you've done.
Yeah. Well, I went to grammar school, and then I went to university and did computer science and physics for 3 years. Then I went into software engineering and development, and make basically with microelectronics.
Yeah.
Then I ended up getting into teaching. And I now work for a university doing correspondence tuition.
Right.
That's how I earn my living.
Right.
And, you know, so I became interested in the alternative knowledge scene in 2003 when I found this disclosure project.
Yep.
And then I built the website starting in 2006. Check the evidence, that is. Mm-hmm. And that was around the same time I came into contact with Dr. Judy Wood, and we did all that. Well, she did most of the 9/11 research. I did bits and bobs sort of tacked onto it.
Yeah.
You know, that I've been doing stuff ever since, really, and just got asked to do talks. And so people got to know my name a bit from doing that, and then met with Richard D. Hall. I think in 2010 we first met. Yep. A lot of people got to know my name because of Richard's programs, and still some people think we're joined at the hip, and I get messages when his website goes offline. I get messages saying, Richard's website's gone offline. And I say, I know, and I don't control it, and I'm not Richard. So write to Richard. And they say, oh, okay then. So It's kind of funny, but that's how we're associated in the mind, you know, of some people, which is nice in some ways. But when I get all these emails when his website goes offline or they can't access it, it's kind of funny. You know, I kind of think, well, you know, I can't do anything. Sorry, you know.
Yeah, no, I get that. And I've been to some of his tours. I've listened to him speak, and he's very thorough. I give him that.
Oh yeah, yeah, very, very.
I mean, I did a bit of background checking on him, and as I do on everyone, and you just use the Google search, but then it always comes under shill, not believable, government, da 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 da. I mean, your name didn't come under that, but his did. But then when I listen to him and I look at his material, I can't see anything wrong with it, really.
Nothing wrong with it.
And I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, Wikipedia has been funded by Microsoft and Bill Gates anyway. Mm-hmm. So I started to look into all of those things, the pyramid structure of how it works. And I'm like, my God, Google, YouTube, WhatsApp, the whole thing is, it just goes up a hierarchical sort of pyramid, and everything's controlled, and even the Wikipedia information. And I just couldn't believe that, you know. It was eye opener.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you.
Big eye opener. But Andrew, it's been great chatting to you.
No problem. Yeah, it'd be good talking to you, Sean, as well.
Definitely. And I'll keep in touch with you. You know, people probably might have a few follow up things that want me to just, you know, ask you and go over, and we'll keep in touch. And if you can send me the video link when you've done that, and,
I will.
And you're on the group now anyway, so we can keep it with you that way anyway.
Great, absolutely. Sean, thanks very much.
No worries. We'll speak soon, mate.
All right then, yeah.
Take care.
Take care then.
Bye-bye. 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 Bye-bye.
Bye.